Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. Russell Means, the well-known leader of the American Indian Movement who helped lead the 1973 uprising at Wounded Knee, died on October 22nd of esophageal cancer. He was 72. Russell Means first came to national prominence on Thanksgiving in 1970 when he and members of AIM took part in a national day of mourning at Plymouth Rock. He said, quote, "Today you will see the Indian reclaim the Mayflower in a symbolic gesture to reclaim our rights in this country." According to Robert McFadden, who wrote Russell Means' obituary for the New York Times, Russell Means, quote, styled himself a throwback to ancestors who resisted the westward expansion of the American frontier, with theatrical protests that brought national attention to poverty and discrimination suffered by his people. He became arguably the nation's best-known Indian since Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse. Russell Means was not a fan of the media. He did not like to talk to journalists, but he did keep a YouTube page and regularly sat behind a desk to speak directly to the people. And here is a clip of Russell Means.
Hello, my relatives. What I have to say about myself is that I've been to prison. I've been a thief. I've been a doper, a dope dealer. And I've also gone to college. I'm an accountant and a computer programmer, as well as getting my doctorate in philosophy. I've been everywhere in the strata of white society. I've even hung around with multimillionaires when there were no billionaires. I am an Indian, American Indian. I prefer American Indian to anyone born in the Western Hemisphere is a Native American. I'm an Oglala Lakota from the Pine Ridge Sioux Indian Reservation, which is still designated in the Defense Department as prisoner of war camp number 44. You see, Indian people, we don't have any rights, any constitutional protections on the reservation whatsoever. No freedom of speech, no privacy. Well, you Americans are in the same boat.
And that is Russell Means speaking on his YouTube page. He did not like speaking with the media, but he did enjoy actually sitting behind a desk and speaking to a number of people. He has many, many clips on his YouTube page. He was born on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. He grew up in the Bay Area before becoming an early leader of AIM. He also acted in dozens of movies, most notably in a lead role in The Last of the Mohicans. Means cut his braids off just a month before his cancer diagnosis, which is a gesture of mourning for his people. His memorial service was held this past weekend in South Dakota, and Tony Gonzalez was there. He's director of AIM West. Their goal is to raise awareness on issues ranging from racism in sports and public schools to the protection of sacred sites and mining and water contamination. And Tony joins me here in studio. Hi, Tony. Thank you for coming.
Good morning, Rose.
It's great to have you. We're going to talk today about the legacy of Russell Means and AIM and how it affects Native activism and storytelling today. We're also joined by Michael Smith, founder of San Francisco's American Indian Film Festival, which begins tomorrow and runs through November 10th. Their motto is Defending Our Way of Life Through Film. The 37-year-old festival has been showcasing movies by both Native and non-Native filmmakers interested in pushing past age-old stereotypes while portraying the resilience and enduring spirit of American Indians. Hi, Michael. Great to see you again.
Good morning, Rose.
Thanks for coming in. So, Tony, you were at Russell Means' memorial. What was the mood like? What were people talking about? How are they remembering him?
Well, it was cheerful, and yet it was solemn. A lot of people, a lot of local people. I was surprised that there wasn't so much of the international, but it was difficult getting out there, you know, through Rapid City and other areas, and rather expensive. So I understand a lot of people here in the Bay Area wanted to go and weren't able to, and I managed to get there. It was very colorful, and a lot of people I hadn't seen in a while. It's unfortunate that funerals and bring people together, such as this, and fortunate that it brings people together at the same time to share ideas, experiences, and there were notable people there. Of course, the leadership, Dennis Banks was there, well known in the Bay Area and your listeners, Clyde Balcourt, national AIM leader as well, and spiritual leader Leonard Crowdog was there among the people, Madonna Thunderhawk. Many of the people that I'm talking about and many others that were there were of the Wounded Knee 1973 during that occupation there of the small village in South Dakota. So it was a moment of prayer. Bill Means, the only remaining sibling of the Means brothers, left, was there as the speaker, moderator, MC, and indeed many of his words were profound in the sense that it was a deep feeling in the sense of loss that he expressed, not only on behalf of his family, but the community and indeed the world, the whole of Western Hemisphere mourned his passing as well. And Bill Means said that towards the effect that there won't be another Russell Means, not for a long time. Mm-hmm. And as one of our spiritual advisors said, they don't, you know, Great Spirit doesn't make people like that anymore. You know, but there are very, very spirited people. And Bill said that now the inspiration that Russell Means brought to many Indian peoples is the fact that there are now 1,000 Russell Means throughout the hemisphere.
Mm. Well, and Michael, you met Russell Means once. Can you talk a little bit about his legacy and really what his work does mean for Native activists today?
I think the work of Russell and Dennis, American Indian Movement, really is has a long reach. You know, it's, I think with here in the Bay Area, you know, with Alcatraz in 69 and formation of a lot of Indian activism, especially the students at SF State, Richard Oaks, John Trudell, and the formation of AIM during that same, around that same time period, all goes hand in hand with, I think, where Native Americans, American Indian people are today, you know, with a lot of growth in our educational system, our family support services, you know, with the Indian Child Welfare Act, Indian Education Act. I think a lot of that the root was the activism. American Indian Movement certainly played a major role in spotlighting the situation, the current living conditions of Indian people during that time period. So it's very important that a lot of Indian people became active in their own communities, in their own urban cities, in their own tribal communities because of the activism and the spotlight that was presented to Indian people during those early times.
I'm glad you brought that up because the Minnesota Post interviewed Clyde Balcourt. You just named him, Tony. He was at the memorial. And Clyde said that the media is really sensationalizing Russell Means' death. I mean, almost every obituary I read led with Wounded Knee, the last of the Mohicans, the fact that he got beaten up in jail, he's been shot, he's been arrested. And Clyde said that CBS called him and asked for controversial statements. And he said, I don't want to talk about that. I really want to talk about the legacy of AIM and the things that Michael just mentioned. He said Russell Means stood up to organized religion. He wanted to talk about a return to traditional spiritual ceremonies. And Clyde wanted to talk about the fact that there are now colleges and junior colleges on reservations across the country. So can you also add to that, you know, what else did AIM do that we're not really hearing about?
Yes, and I agree with Clyde, you know, with the idea that how media always tries to pick up the mucky muck and kind of go on that and disregard
and
the achievements.
It, but
and disregard
right.
the achievements and,
right.
and you know, what he's accomplished. Russell Means, set the tone and the standard, in particular identifying key points to keep in people's minds as they move forward with a peripheral vision. And that is enemies of Indian people throughout the Western Hemisphere being, and very critical, being education from the Western Europeans, governments, again, from the imposition of colonial and settler governments, and religions. The imposition of the many religions on Indian reservations, for example, it's a pop shot throughout the U.S., how the U.S. government worked with different religions, giving them access or permission to go onto reservations, or here in California, rancherias, and establish themselves. Like here in California, right next door to each other, you have Catholics dominating one rancheria or reservation, and then you have Methodist over here, or you have Lutherans. The vindictiveness that might be sounding in Russell Means' voice when he describes who the enemies are is a fact and a legacy that that our history is left with, especially now with the new doctrine of discovery being in question, not only by governments, but the United Nations itself. And that's what I want to talk about also, Rose, how Russell Means and his family have been deeply involved in the movement. It wasn't an overnight sensation, you know, that that the American Indian Movement was created in July of 1968. But indeed, the family of Russell Means in 1964, there were four particular families that took Alcatraz mm-hmm. in 1964. That was the first step to what led to the occupation by Richard Oakes and Mickey Gimmel. Many people have now gone, but who drew up the plan at San Francisco State University to retake Alcatraz in November 1969. So therein began many of these movements, of course, that in 1972, the planning for the BIA take over the Bureau of Indian Affairs in 1972. And prior to that, Rose, in July and August and on into September, in quick haste, mind you, the elections were around the corner at that time. Richard Nixon right. and the American Indian Movement gathered to draft the plans for the Trail of Broken Treaties, or the which came to be known as the American Indian Manifesto, or Indian Manifesto. It was a 20-point program of 1972 that are still very relevant today and will be discussed next month at a conference here in San Francisco. I'll talk to you
more
about it.
Oh, great, definitely. And then in the 1980s, he shifted his attention to highlight the suffering of indigenous populations outside of the U.S., the Mosquito Indians in Nicaragua. He was involved in that. And then he was the vice presidential running mate of Larry Flynt in 1984. He sought the Libertarian Party's nominee for president, but he lost to Representative Ron Paul. And then in 2002, he ran as an independent for governor of New Mexico. And today we are speaking about Russell Means, who died on October 22nd of esophageal cancer. He was 72, a well-known activist with the American Indian Movement. And we're speaking about Russell Means and AIM, the legacy they left, what it means for activists today, and also storytelling today. We're joined by Tony Gonzalez, director of AIM West, and Michael Smith, founder of San Francisco's American Indian Film Fest, which kicks off tomorrow and runs through November 10th. And we'd love to hear from you. What do you remember about so many of these actions, whether Alcatraz or Wounded Knee or occupation of the Bureau of Indian Affairs? If you've got any stories you'd like to share, if you were a member or a supporter of AIM, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And what legacy, what's the legacy of Russell Means and AIM? And How do you think it affects Native activists today and storytelling? We'll talk to Michael about the stories that are being told at the film festival. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can leave a comment on our website. And I want to read an email. Before the show, we were talking about AIM and the Black Panthers and why AIM isn't as well known as the Black Panthers. And we got an email from Carolyn who says, I'm in my early 50s and I remember both AIM and the Black Panthers. I think the Panthers may create a stronger memory because they were very effective in instigating some positive social and government changes. Many of the members that are still alive have continued calling our attention to areas that still need change. I don't remember anything as significant with AIM, so that may explain why they're not as significant a presence. All I can remember was the attempted Alcatraz takeover. Also, I think in many people's minds, I'm not sure about what can effectively be done to help the Indian communities. They're a group of people who were disenfranchised in a sort of limbo. They are considered a sovereign nation living among us who have no way of effectively being sustainable beyond gambling. Maybe many people are like me in that we feel bad about their situation and don't know what can be done. Michael, what are your thoughts on this? Because you look at someone like Russell Means, who was born on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, and today the unemployment rate is still between 60 and 80%.
You know, it's just still economics. Economies on reservations are a lot of time very deplorable. You know, and I think Pine Ridge gets a lot of media attention because of that situation. But, you know, all across the country, there's a lot of pockets of poverty on our Indian reservations. You know, a lot of people, the major media, the individuals such as the person that wrote the email, think that, you know, we have gaming and that is the end all. I think a lot of reservation economies are diversifying beyond that. And many tribes, probably over two-thirds of our tribal nations, do not have gaming. Or it will not sustain that in those different pockets of America. You know, so I think American Indian tribes are, through the years, have been diversifying their economies through fishing, building up their agricultural, and even going into entertainment complexes. I was visiting with the chairman of the Yakchin Indian community in Arizona, and they're not only an agricultural tribe by history, they're building, they do have a casino there, but they are also building a big entertainment venue there where their hope is to not only have mainstream films, but also open up an opportunity for American Indian film works. So we will be working with them in a couple of weeks, bringing a couple of films to their grand opening on the 18th of November, but also working in the future, bringing and hopefully steering filmmakers and their works, the distributors, to try to get a lot of our film works in different public areas.
Well, and it seems like, based on Carolyn's email, we really need these films and these stories, because a lot of people really don't know much about AIM other than the Alcatraz takeover. And again, going back to this Minnesota Post piece in which Clyde Bellacourt was interviewed, he said that, for example, there's an American Indian Opportunity Center in Minneapolis, which trains American Indians to work in health fields. And then there's also the Legal Rights Center, and that organization is a springboard for has been a springboard for people like U.S. District Court Judge Michael Davis and U.S. Representative Keith Ellison, who have a deeper understanding of Indian issues than most in public life because of the Legal Rights Center. What else would you add to that, Tony? And what else don't we know about AIM?
Well, coming from Minneapolis, the article and the interview with Clyde, it stands to reason that they would ask these kind of questions, because cities like Minneapolis, like Seattle, Washington, like the Bay Area here in San Francisco, Oakland, and other major cities were faced with Indian relocation in the 1950s. And so a lot of Indian people were forcibly removed or not forcibly, but enticed and coerced, and that there'll be training and job opportunities if they move off
exactly.
the reservations, right. which was a major ploy to deplete the peoples from those areas. So extrapolation of the mineral resources and other type of economic development by the private sector could intervene and take over those areas.
And they got tired of racism. I mean, my grandmother, who grew up on a reservation in Ukiah, just got tired of seeing signs that said no Indians or dogs allowed, and she couldn't get her hair done. The only restaurant that would allow her to eat was a Chinese restaurant, but she had to eat behind a curtain. So she left and moved to Oakland because she got tired of it.
These problems are rampant across the country, from the East Coast all the way down to here. Russell Means stand for his people included the protection and the rights of for the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty. And Rose, you know, the United States the Congress ratified over 365 treaties with Indian nations across the country, and the United States Constitution, Article 6, says that treaties are the supreme law of the land. Well, virtually every treaty has been violated in one way or another, and there was no effort for justice. And so it is that Russell Means and a lot of Indian people from North America joined together for the first time with Indians around the world and organized a world conference in Geneva, Switzerland, 1977. That was the first time that black Indians of the African continent, Indians of the Americas, indigenous peoples of the Pacific and Asia, and indeed Indian people of white Europe. There are what's referred to as the Laplanders, but these are the Sami people of the Scandinavia region. So all Indian peoples for the first time came together in Geneva, Switzerland, 1977, and developed the precursor to what the United Nations General Assembly adopted in September of 2007, and that is the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. This is a living document with a minimum of standards and not contrived or invented rights, but these 46 articles are taken from international laws and standards for everyone.
And I wanted to get to one call before we take a break. Let's hear from Brad in San Francisco. Hi, Brad.
Hello.
Hi, Brad.
Yes. Can you hear me? Hello?
Is Brad there?
Yes, I'm right here.
Oh, hi.
Can
go
you
ahead.
Hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. I hope this is not inappropriate, but I'm also going in with the individual who sent the email about the awareness of how to contribute and how to participate, because it's right on score to what I'm about to say. I want to, for myself, publicly apologize for not giving more of my time, more of my energy, and more of myself to this issue. I've always considered it to be one of the most important, significant issues in this country that has not been addressed. And I would, if it's time for me to start, and it's time for others. And being an average person, I can't apologize for others, but I know there's a lot of people out there like me who hold the same sentiment.
So. Well, Brad, you know, thank you for calling. I mean, it's never too late to learn about it. And I'm just so glad you called in. And I'm hoping that some of this information will maybe pique your curiosity. And there's a few books about this and documentaries. We'll talk about that after the break. But thank you so much for your call. And we are talking today about the passing of Russell Means, the legacy of AIM, and the American Indian Film Festival. It's your call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and we'll be back after this. On election night, be part of a special broadcast here on KALW. I'm Rose Aguilar, and I'll be hosting our coverage of the 2012 elections live from the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley. If you'd like to join us at the Freight, please pre-register at KALW.org. You can also tune in to 91.7 FM for results from across the country and analysis from a Bay Area perspective. It all starts at 5 p.m. Tuesday, election night, here on KALW. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We will discuss coverage of Hurricane Sandy. Who's making the connections between Sandy and climate change? I'm hearing more about this as the days go on. We'll be joined by Juan Gonzalez, co-host of Democracy Now!, co-author of News for All the People, the epic story of race in the American media. He's also out with an excellent documentary called Harvest of Empire, and it takes a look at why people leave Latin America at places like Cuba to come to the United States. And then on Monday, if you've got any last-minute questions about propositions, about races, about the logistics of voting, we will open the lines and take your questions because Tuesday is Election Day. It's here. Tuesday is Election Day. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Oh, also, if you've got any questions about the propositions, we've done debates about almost all of them. And you can find those debates at yourcallradio.org, along with a number of resources. Today, we are speaking about the passing of Russell Means, a well-known leader of the American Indian Movement, who helped lead the 1973 uprising at Wounded Knee. And he did so many other things that are not really getting much media attention. He died on October 22nd of esophageal cancer. He was 72. And if you'd like to join us, if you have thoughts or memories of AIM, or if you're like Brad and maybe you just don't know much about the movement and you've got some questions about it, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. What is the legacy of AIM and Russell Means, and what does their work mean for people who care about Native issues today? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. Tony Gonzalez was at this past weekend's memorial service in South Dakota. He's director of AIM West. They work on a number of issues ranging from racism in sports, public schools, the protection of sacred sites, mining, water contamination. We're also joined by Michael Smith, founder of San Francisco's American Indian Film Fest, which kicks off tomorrow and runs through November 10th. Their motto is defending our way of life through film. And Michael, what would you say to someone like Brad, who says he feels bad because he just didn't really pay much attention to AIM? The film festival would be a great event for Brad to attend.
You know, a lot of times people just don't know the current issues of Indian people. And I think opportunities such as the, going out to Alcatraz, you know, coming to the film festival, going to Stanford Powwow, which are community events. People have the opportunity to learn more about our cultures and languages and dance and tradition. I think the film festival gives us all an opportunity to learn more about ourselves. You know, even I, being part of the film fest since we started in 1975, I have the pleasure of looking at all of these films and documentaries that come in. So every year, my heart, my mind grows, you know, because I learn more and feel the sufferings, feel the joys and frustrations of Indian people across North America through the films that we showcase. We have we had over 150 films that were submitted this year, and we've selected about 90 films that will be shown during this time period, November 2 through November 10. We have documentaries from California, from Arizona, from the Midwest, Canada, the Northwest region. So there's a lot of different tribes represented, you know, throughout these films, the documentaries and short stories.
And can you give us some, I know it's hard to pick a few highlights, but can you just give us a few subjects? I know you've got one that deals with AIM, one about Dennis Banks in particular. What else excites you this year?
Well, we have our opening night film is called Path of Souls, and it comes from Canada. It stars probably our best-known Indian actor, Adam Beach, and it's a story about discovery and just reinterpretation and interpretation of a lot of the sacred sites across North America. And I think that film, you know, a lot of people have heard of Devil's Peak in Wyoming and some of the rock arts and different parts of the Southwest and here in California, across North America. So it's a story of road story, you know, just traveling through these different sacred sites and their meaning yesterday and their meaning today and tomorrow. That's one of the highlights, I think, of our festival, Path of Souls, opening film Friday, November 2nd. You know, also, you know, besides the documentaries and short films, you know, we have an important, another important issue that we will show through film called the Red Dress Redress Project, which is the story of the missing women, Native women throughout Canada.
Hmm.
You know, we have a lot of Indian women that, you know, that have gone missing and underreported. The exposure by media is almost not there. Over the last couple of decades, many nearly 1,000 Native women have disappeared. And this short film presented by Tina Keeper, who is really one of our outstanding Native actors from Canada, she directed this film, and I think it's bring an important light to the issue of missing and exploited Native women throughout Canada.
And again, the American Indian Film Fest kicks off tomorrow in San Francisco, and it ends on November 10th. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. And it's not at the Embarcadero this year, right? It's at the...
We've moved to the Bridge.
To the Bridge, yes.
The Bridge Theater.
Okay.
And I think it kind of gives us a little bit opportunity to be in one screen where we're the center. And I think we've been there we've done some events there in the past decades. I think we premiered Smoke Signals a long time ago at the Bridge Theater.
Right. It's one of the few single screens left in the city of San Francisco.
So we're looking forward to seeing how that works out for us. You know, we've had, we've been at, this is still a landmark theater. They've had a lot of, I think they closed one of their theaters and it kind of caused a little schedule cramping, and they offered this theater for this year. We're going to see how it works. We may return to the Embarcadero next year, but then again, we may stay at the Bridge.
Well, it would be great because they need all the support they can get. Well, we've got a number of calls, so let's go through a few, and then we'll get responses from Michael Smith and Tony Gonzalez. Let's hear from Anne in San Francisco. Hi, Anne. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. I was just going to encourage people to go to the film fest, but because of the subject matter, but also the Bridge Theater. I live in the Inner Richmond, and it is a great cinema. It's one of these one-screen, old-time cinemas, and I just would encourage people to go for that reason.
Great. Well, we'll be there. Thank you, Anne, for calling in. Let's hear next from John in Berkeley. Hi, John.
Good morning. I happen to have met Russell Means only once, and that was about 3 years ago, but I was impressed beyond belief with this man and the depth of his character, and I am not very impressed these days with public figures, but he was one of the few. I also remember his involvement in the first invasion of Alcatraz, quote unquote, which happened in 1964. I was 9 years old. And just to show you how things have changed, the Examiner, the headline was Wacky Sioux Invasion of Alcatraz. Wacky Sioux Invasion. I don't think you'd see that these days. But what I really liked about Russell Means was his political independence. He antagonized both the right and the left. For instance, in the 1980s, his defense of the Mosquito Indians caused him incredible condemnation from all of these left-leaning political figures, and his libertarian philosophy put him nowhere on the political spectrum. I really admired his independence. And I think the greatest thing, the thing that really inspired me as far as one of the things he said was that my people won't be free until all Americans are free. Mm. And thank you very much.
Well, thank you for calling in, John. And speaking of political independence, maybe you can answer this one, Michael. We have a listener who wrote in and wanted to know why he ran as a libertarian. He was the vice presidential running mate with Larry Flynt in 1984 and then sought the Libertarian Party's nomination for president, but he lost to Representative Ron Paul. And so do you know why he ran as a libertarian?
Is to Michael or
I'm
to
sorry,
me,
Tony. Rose? Yes, Tony.
Well, I do recall him running at that time, and it was right in the midst of the Nicaragua Civil Revolution that was going on. Him joining up with Larry Flynt, it riled up a lot of people. That was Russell, and any platform he can get to raise attention about the cause of Indian peoples, he'll do it. And Larry Flynt was one of those individuals that offered and provided that very platform. I remember him swinging into San Francisco on long white limousines and you know, kind of made people think about, you know, what way is Russ heading. But that was his character, his personality. He's determined to get his issue across, excuse me, and his point of view, Rose. I wanted to...
Do you have any water?
Yes, okay. I have this cup here. Your caller, John, mentioned reading that article saying that Wacky Sioux, you know, taking the island. Well, those Wacky Sioux Lakota Oglala peoples were referencing their cause and issue based on a federal statute that says that any government land that is no longer in use is to revert back to the original owners. And that is the wackiness that the people at that time, they pulled out a statute and used it to the max. And the statute is still very much alive and is applicable.
Well, thank you again for calling in, John. And today we are joined by Tony Gonzalez, director of AIM West, and Michael Smith, founder of the American Indian Film Fest, which kicks off tomorrow in San Francisco at the Bridge Theater. And if you'd like to join us, we have just over 10 minutes left. We're talking about the legacy of Russell Means and the American Indian movement and what it means for today's Native activists and storytelling. What stories do you think still need to be told? 866-798-8255. If you have any memories of AIM, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. Let's hear from Molly in Monterey. Hi, Molly. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks so much. This is a wonderful show. It's an issue I've just been passionately interested in for a long time. And I thought that statement that was just brought up of Russell's, if my people won't be free until everyone in the country is free, is very meaningful. I would suggest that if people want to know more about the what happened, I learned a lot at Wounded Knee. I learned a lot from the Peter Matheson book, In the Spirit of Crazy Horse. It's been extremely hard to get a hold of because it was suppressed in this country, but it's very thorough. And then Woman Man Killer, who was Cherokee chief, I believe, twice, her autobiography, Man Killer, includes discussion of this period at Alcatraz and so on. And just as one little thing that people can do, Leonard Peltier can use donations to his prison account for things like shampoo and toothpaste. The prisoners have to pay for it. He's still there. And the information, I think, is on a website, Leonard Peltier.
Yeah, that's so important. Thank you for bringing that up. We'll put a link on our website. And since you brought up Wounded Knee, so this happened in 1973. It was a 71-day standoff with federal agents at Wounded Knee on the Pine Ridge Reservation. Two members of the community were killed. One federal officer was paralyzed. There were so many shootouts that occurred over a 10-week period. And let's hear a clip. This is a newscast from 1973 about the occupation of Wounded Knee, and it's got some moments of Russell Means talking about why he decided to take part in this.
The militant American Indian movement called this meeting to seek the support of the tribal elders of the Pine Ridge Reservation for a bold plan to force federal attention to Indian demands. Not all of the hereditary chiefs attended, and among those who did, it was clear there was not total support for the militants. The elders were being challenged to defy the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Indian establishment, which historically directed their lives.
The Oglala Nation is at a crossroads that can change the course of history for Indian people all across the nation. And sometimes there has to be violence to force the white man to listen. You leaders, you chiefs, have to be right there with us when we do it. But we seize Wounded Knee. Either we force the federal government to kill us all once again like they did 83 years ago at Wounded Knee, or else they come out and they negotiate and meet our demands.
The chiefs advised there be more meetings with other Indians. They agreed there should be change, but wanted to wait a bit longer.
And that is from a newscast in 1973 talking about the 71-day standoff with federal agents at Wounded Knee on the Pine Ridge Reservation. In 1995, Russell Means said, quote, "We were surrounded by the armed might of the United States of America, the most militarily powerful country in the world, but we were free. For 71 days, we walked in freedom without a white man's rules or regulations." Michael, do you have any comments about Wounded Knee and just the significance of it today?
You know, I was in college at the University of Washington during that time period. And, you know, a lot of the people that, you know, went to Wounded Knee were a lot of community people. I knew a lot of the Leonard Peltier was from Seattle. I knew him as him and his brother running a auto repair shop, then getting involved with the activism of the fishing rights and health care. And during that time, I think he went to South Dakota. So I think a lot of the activism, you know, again, grew from the period of the 70s. And again, it made an impact today, you know, through the legislation that benefits American Indian people and through the media that, even though it's somewhat limited, you know, we do have a little bit of media. We're seeing a little bit of growth in that area, but still it certainly needs more and more Native people such as yourself, Rose, you know, in media. You know, through one of our programs, Tribal Touring Program, which has been 12 years old, you know, we go out to reservations, we work with young people to learn the craft of filmmaking, the writing. And we're encouraging them to not only finish their college, high school, college careers, but think about media and broadcasting, public relations, advertising, areas that can benefit their tribal communities.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up because the Fourth Estate recently looked at front page election coverage and looked at how many articles were written by whites, Latinos, blacks, Asians about issues that affect those communities. And of course, it was like 90% white, right? But they did not even include Native Americans. I mean, when you look at studies about whether it's poverty or housing or voting, Native Americans are almost always left out. And we just got an email from Lisa that says, it's not just that AIM is unknown. The history of the Native people in this country is simply not taught. I was astonished, she writes, to learn about the great civilization that existed in the Southeast at the time of the conquest. The city of Cahokia, at the height of its power, was bigger than most European cities. There is so much else that just is not taught. Trail of Tears, the Comanche Nation. We are so caught up in slavery and the black-white conflict that we pay no attention to this other great American tragedy. It's not that the Black Panthers did more. It's that American Indians simply do not exist in the modern narrative. She says it's sad and infuriating. And Michael, you were on last year talking about the fact that you've been around, well, for now 37 years. Last year it was 36. And the Chronicle at that point had not even covered the film festival. And then, Tony, you go to Alcatraz every year on Thanksgiving, and that doesn't get covered, right?
Right. November and October, this past October for Indigenous Peoples Day, no press, no TV, rarely, all through these many years. The only radio that covers it annually, both October and November, is KPFA radio, which John Trudell initiated back in 1969, covering for KPFA from The Rock. And so it has that bit of history with the Indian community here in the Bay Area. But Rosa, I wanted to mention as we get closer to the end of your program that I first met Russell in 1980, and we've been close, and I'm close with the family and with Bill Means, who occasionally does come into the Bay Area on our invitation and a part of the American Indian Movement, AIM West, etc. And at that time in 1980, when I met Russ, it was at the 6th International Indian Treaty Conference, and that was in Fort Belknap, Montana. And the host was were the Gros Ventre people under the leadership of James Main at that time. And I was with the Chicano movement at that time, 1980. And Russell inspired me and forced my thinking, and we're good friends. We jogged and we did a lot of things together, but he forced my thinking to move away from all these other isms that Chicanos were indigenous peoples of this Western Hemisphere. And yet at that time in the 70s and even into the early 80s, we were studying the Chicano movement was into Marxism, Leninism, every ism, but Indianismo. And this is what Russ, you know, lit that spark that moved many people to be thinking about their indigenousness and questioning Western ideology. Indeed, Mother Jones' article came out during the Black Hills Alliance gathering in 1980, and I think it's the article is now back since his death. But where Russell Means basically says that for Mother Earth to survive, Europe has to die. You know, and that's very striking and terse words, but it raises the attention of people, and it created a lot of stir, as Michael Smith here just said, among the left and thinking about all the other isms.
Right, and he clearly loved to be provocative, and he was an actor. So
very
he,
catalytic.
Right, and Michael?
I was going to mention that Russell appears in a film called Tiger Eyes, which I think may be his last film. That will be shown at the Bridge Theater on Sunday night, November 4th. And ironically, he plays a man dying of cancer in that film. And it's a very moving performance that he presents in this film, Tiger Eyes, playing Sunday night.
And you can find more information about the Film Fest, which kicks off tomorrow in San Francisco at the Bridge, on yourcallradio.org.
And Rose, to the caller, Brent, who spoke earlier about neglecting to know the history of American Indian movement and Indian people in general, Mike Smith is going to be showing a film on November 3rd, I believe it is, with Dennis Banks. And that's an important figure in the movement and in the history of the U.S. as well. And Dennis goes through the Long Walk, 1978, the purpose of that. There was a lot of anti-Indian legislation going on at that time, which through this walk across the country helped defeat each one of those 11 bills. Mm-hmm. And he goes into the film documenting the walk in 2008, the 30-year anniversary of that, and also the walk for health and against diabetes that he just recently completed. So there's a whole history on that November 3rd showing by Dennis Banks' new documentary.
Great. I look forward to it. And we have time for one more call. Let's hear from Daryl in San Francisco. Hi, Daryl.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, yes. One of your callers asked about what they might do specifically, and I didn't hear any specific answer. One of the things you can do is contribute, even if it's a small amount of money, to the colleges and high schools that are on the reservations. Examples, Lakota Indian College, St. Joseph Labre Schools. These are schools that are actually producing not only educational opportunities for Indians on the reservation, but also a lot of their people return after getting degrees at these schools and going on to outside universities. They return to the reservation and work on the reservation. These can be found easily on the internet, the addresses and so forth. But those schools, even though they are run by different religious organizations, some of them and some are not, they produce real benefits to the people on the reservation. So that's something you can do, and it doesn't take very, very much money.
Great. Thank you so much for the call, Daryl. And I can't take your call, Andre, because we're almost out of time. But do you have a quick update on the occupation of Glen Cove? This is the sacred burial ground in Vallejo, and this took place last year. Just quickly. Any updates?
I don't have very much at the moment. But the people that were occupying Glen Cove to protect it as a sacred spiritual site were very disappointed with the outcome of the tripartite agreement from the city of Vallejo and the Indian nation in charge of that piece of property, and the intertribal Indian community that under the leadership of Wounded Knee. But they're still trying to work out something, but somewhat disappointed at this stage.
Okay, and you can find more information at protectglencove.org. And in our remaining minute, I mean, we had full lines today, a ton of emails. Every time we do shows about this issue, we get so many people calling. There's so much interest. What can we do to raise awareness about these issues? We don't even have a museum in San Francisco. There's work on it, but it's going to take a while.
Yes, and not only do we not have a museum, or I'd prefer to call it an interpretive center, which is what our challenge will be, to establish such a center like that, Rose. But there isn't in San Francisco a community center,
right?
An American Indian or intertribal. You know, there's Indian people here, not just from California, across the country, from the relocation of the 50s, but we have Indians from Mexico, Central and South America, over 100,000 new peoples, you know, as a result of this, and yet we have no community cultural center. And this is what we're striving for. And AIM West, if I may say, we are having a meeting next month. People can go to our website for that information at www.aimwest.info.
Okay.
And get information. We're going to be talking about the 1972 Yeah, BIA takeover.
Great.
The Indian Manifesto.
And we will put that on our website.
Thank you
and
very
we'll
much.
Have you on again, because I know you have so many more stories to share. Michael, quick final thoughts?
Just encourage people to come attend the 37th Annual American Indian Film Festival, November 2 through November 10. You know, Dennis Banks is also a performer, a traditional singer and drummer, and Dennis will be at the Palace of Fine Arts November 10.
Oh, great.
Being part of our entertainment at
Great.
The theater.
All right, thank you. Michael Smith is founder of the American Indian Film Fest. Kicks off tomorrow. Tony Gonzalez is director of AIM West. Find more information, yourcallradio.org. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh.
And thanks for your phone calls and emails. I'm Rose Aguilar. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss media coverage of Hurricane Sandy. Who's making the connections between Sandy and climate change? We'll be joined by Juan Gonzalez, co-host of Democracy Now! And co-author of News for All the People, the epic story of race and the American media. We'll also discuss his new documentary, Harvest of Empire, and coverage of immigration. Where did you see the best reporting this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.